1, 2, 3.
We're back with more of Lake Effect. I'm Audrey Nowakowski.
And I'm Bonnie North. That's some very pretty guitar playing, but it's probably not the sound you'd expect when you hear the name John Oates. It's something probably much more like this. What I want, you got, it might be hard to handle. Like a flame that burns a candle. A candle feeds a flame. Yeah, yeah, what I got, full stock of thoughts and dreams that scatter. And you pull them all together. And I can't explain. Oh yeah, where were you? You make my dreams come true.
John Oates still tours with Daryl Hall and is proud of the work they did together. It earned them a spot in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2014. But these days, you're more likely to find Oates performing with the Good Road Band, exploring American roots music and touring his newest album, Arkansas.
Oates and the band will be in Sheboygan this Saturday at the Weill Center. We reached him by phone at his studio, and he explained listeners shouldn't be too surprised by his current musical interests.
You know, I was playing guitar for about 10 years before I met Daryl Hall, and we embarked on our collaboration and our partnership, which, of course, you know, led to all the big pop songs and the big hits. But before I met him, I was pretty much a folk blues musician. That's what I did. I played by myself in coffee houses, acoustic guitar, playing a lot of traditional music. So in a way, this Arkansas album is a real return to my earliest musical influences. And now I understand that people probably wouldn't relate to that because they don't, you know, delve that deep into my history, which I get. But nevertheless, it's still a very, very important part of my musical DNA.
Well, and it is such an important part of rock and roll's DNA. I mean, you're talking about Delta Blues and you're talking about all of those black musicians that have woven that sound, and it's what created rock and roll. And you've kind of stripped it back, you know, hearkening back to what they might have sounded like.
Well, I discovered a lot in the process of making this record. It was really kind of eye-opening for me as well, because even though I knew a lot about, you know, the traditional American music in the early days of this, you know, blues and ragtime and things like that, there was other things I didn't realize. First of all, it wasn't necessarily only a black, you know, idiom or black style. I have songs on there that were by a guy named Emmett Miller, another one by Jimmy Rogers, who was the godfather of country music. There was really it was a much more kind of open-ended landscape of pop music back in the earliest days of radio and when the phonograph record player was first invented. So what I really ended up doing on this album was kind of creating a bit of a snapshot of what music was like in the 1920s and the 1930s when really, American popular music was just kind of in its infancy. So it led to, in addition to being, you know, the roots of rock and roll, it's also the roots of American popular music. And that's what I discovered as I began the project. And then I got very excited about it and began to, like, look at it as well, this is a chance for not only me to rediscover and discover new things about this era of time, but I think there's a lot of people in America, especially a younger generation, who might not know about music and what American popular music was like before rock and roll.
So when you were delving into all of this music and deciding what you wanted to put on the album, what were some of the things that surprised you that you
learned?
Well,
what happened was the album really began, the idea for the album began in a very, very simple way. I actually was not intending to make an album. I thought that I would go into the recording studio. And I just love to go in the recording studio and do things. I love to work and be creative. But I went in there with the idea that I would record a couple Mississippi John Hurt songs. Mississippi John Hurt was very influential on me as a kid, and I learned all his music in a very accurate way. I had a connection to him, a personal connection to him. My guitar teacher in Philadelphia when I was a teenager was good friends with him and took him around to folk festivals and things. And eventually, I ended up with his guitar. It's a long story, but at any rate, I went in to make a few tracks, Mississippi John Hurt songs. And after I did it, I was not 100% satisfied because even though I could do it, it was like just kind of a well, you know, it'll never be as good as the original. It was, you know, that was the feeling I took away. But I didn't want to abandon the idea of these songs, and I assembled a band. And I said, I've never heard these songs played with a band. They're always associated with an acoustic guitar and a voice. And so when I assembled this incredibly eclectic, amazing band, the life that they brought and the interpretation that they brought to these older songs just opened my eyes to something else. And I thought, okay, this is amazing. But I think this has more legs than just restricting it to only Mississippi John Hurt music. So what ended up happening, I guess not to avoid a cliche, but the light bulb moment happened when I said to myself, what music was being played on the radio and in the jukeboxes at the time in the late 1920s when Mississippi John Hurt was first recording? And I said, I wonder what he was listening to. I wonder what people around him were listening to. What kind of music might have influenced him? And that's where the album took on a wider scope, and I began to record all these other songs.
A steel driving man named John Henry. Oh, he went down. He went down. You know that he went down. I'm gonna take this hammer to my captain. Oh, won't you tell him I'm gone? Oh, won't you tell him I'm gone? Oh, won't you tell him I'm gone? Well, it's a long, long way from East Colorado.
That's such a cool way to think about it, because it allows us as listeners, you know, to kind of go into a world that, you know, we wouldn't have any connection to otherwise. Was that a question did you ever meet him? Did you ever get a chance to ask him things like that?
No, but I did see him play live many, many times. When I was in high school, it was, you know, during the 60s, the early and mid-60s, when the folk revival was happening. Mississippi John Hurt recorded between 1926 and 1929, and then he worked on a farm in Mississippi until he was rediscovered in the early 1960s and brought back, you know, mainly to college audiences and folk audiences at places like the Newport and the Philadelphia Folk Festival and various coffee houses. So that's when I saw him play, in the early 60s. And I loved him. I mean, I loved him from the first time I heard him. I thought he was unique. I recognized his uniqueness. He didn't sound like the other Delta blues players. And in fact, he really isn't a Delta blues player. He's basically a hill country or a Piedmont-style blues player, which is really different. I mean, I know I'm parsing it pretty finely here, but his style is closer related to ragtime than it is to Delta blues. So there was just something about his guitar style and his songs and his singing that really appealed to me. And as I said, I now have his guitar, the guitar that was given to him when he was rediscovered in New York in the early 60s, and I have that guitar. And so it's kind of a connection. I made a full circle connection to him.
That ragtime connection, you're right. When I was listening to a lot of that stuff, I was really into Lightnin' Hopkins. I really loved that sound.
Mm-hmm.
There was a rawness and just kind of a grit to it. But you're right, Mississippi John Hurt had, it was softer somehow.
It was softer. It was a little gentler, but it was also very kind of, it also was like, he had a sense of humor. He had some slyness to him. Some of his songs had very clever lyrics. So here again, he was unique among the blues people who rediscovered during the 60s.
What do you think he would think of this album if he could hear it?
Oh, boy. I would hope he would smile and love it. I hope he's smiling up there in heaven. If Spotify reaches that far.
I just wonder, you know, if he would have enjoyed the opportunity to play them with a band.
Well, I think he would have. I think any musician always loves to try things and experimenting and have a chance to play with other great musicians. You know, for me, moving to Nashville a number of years ago was really a here again. I couldn't have made this album had I not moved to Nashville and made friends and been kind of accepted in the Americana roots music community. So it really all, there's so many elements that came together to make this record what it was.
There's a faded glow along the Great River Road. One damn farmhouse hanging on a broke down porch, looking over miles and before the clock strikes noon. Don't you know the days and nights? Dreams drift slowly by. Another delta dawn. Hope worth waiting on. Where that old man little flow. The snow white cotton fields of Arkansas here. There's a long black train running on a southbound track. Heed that distance.
So what is it like taking it out on the road and having audiences react to it? Have you had any surprises there?
Well, the biggest surprise was that people love it, and I was really happy. I mean, that, of course, you know, makes any artist and any musician, you know, feel good when people respond, you know, positively to what you do. It was one of those things where I just knew it was good, and I just wanted to get it out into the world and play it for people. And the core of the band that I play with live is the band that made the record, which is also that you don't always get a chance to do that. Many times you'll make a record with a lot of studio musicians who don't necessarily go on the road, and so you have to, you know, maybe the sound on stage is not exactly the way it was on the record, but these are the guys that actually made the record. And so they're very deep into the music, and their skill level is off the charts. So playing with them is just, you know, it's fun, it's a joy. They can play anything, and you know, we do everything from the music of Arkansas to other new songs that I've written, to Hall & Oates hits, to some covers of early rock and roll. I mean, we do pretty much everything. And it's just a lot of fun. And it's just about having a great musical experience and telling stories and putting the songs into a context.
When a band cooks like that on stage, the audience can feel it. You know, that's what at least I live for when I go to see and hear bands. It's like, I want to see that connection, and I want to feel that. And when that's happening, that's magic.
It is magic, and there's no way to bottle it. There's no way to describe it. Really, it is what it is. And you try every night to conjure that magic up. And you know, when you have professionals, you can do it on a pretty regular basis. Sometimes it's at a higher level than others. But here again, that's the indefinable thing about magic.
There are times I've seen bands where it's at that higher level for whatever reason that night, and you can see the musicians just looking at each other like, wow.
What's happening here? Right, exactly.
This is so cool.
And that's true. It's true. It happens to me all the time, especially with this band that I'm playing with, the Good Road Band. They're just so great, and they're great people. We're good friends, and all that, the good vibes really just, you know, it just pours off the stage.
So you got to tell me who's in the band.
Yeah, well, the core of the band is the rhythm section, and that's Guthrie Trapp on lead guitar, Josh Day on drums and percussion, and Steve Mackey on bass. And that's the core of the band. Depending on the show, sometimes some of the other players will join. Sam Bush, legendary mandolin player, he was a big part of making this record, but of course, Sam has his own band and his own tours that he does. So every once in a while, you know, I get lucky enough to have him, but he's not with us on this particular run in January.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, phenomenal
yep.
musician. And yep. I wondered, because I heard some good mandolin
on
there.
Him.
And that was him, yeah.
Yep.
Because, wow, that's great stuff. Well, you know, John, it is so great that you are not only bringing this tour here to Sheboygan, but that you're continuing to explore and you're continuing to create and you're not trying to just relive so-called glory days. I mean, I really love it when I talk to musicians, and there's just so much going on that it's built on all of your history, but you're not staying there.
Well, yeah, I mean, listen, I have great respect for the work that and honor the work that I've done with Daryl over the years, and he and I still tour all the time. I mean, we did 40 shows last year together. So there's plenty of opportunity to go out and play the classic Hall & Oates stuff. But here again, you know, that music and the hits and the big hits and the success has given me the opportunity to do whatever I want. So I'm very aware of that, and I don't take it for granted. So the way I look at it is that I want to go out there and do the best I can, because not many artists and not many musicians get a chance to be in that position. And so I don't want to waste that opportunity.
Well, we're so looking forward to having you here in Wisconsin, and thank you so much for taking some time today to talk with us.
Well, thanks for having me, I'm sure you're going to enjoy this band, and I can't wait to come up and play.
Mississippi John, staring at the sun, watching that big kid Allen go slide on by.
John Oates and the Good Road Band will perform this Saturday evening at the Stephanie H. Weil Center for the Performing Arts in Sheboygan. There's more information at wuwm.com.